Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about five ways to plant cover crops on a budget. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the new president of the National Corn Growers Association. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about history of baseball and agriculture. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilt Agronomy. They turned down the heat last night.
Way down. The two games.
They were red hot in Milwaukee, and then Wrigley just sucked it right out of them.
Better get it out of the way now. Just take the L, rally, and come back.
Oh, okay. I like that part. I thought you meant, like, lose again. So,
no,
we don't know how well this will hold up for people that are listening weeks from now. But right now, the Brewers are, they won two games in Milwaukee, lost two games, and now they got to play back in Milwaukee, and it's just that weird time of...
This is why you did so well in the regular season, to have the ability to play at home.
Play at home, right. You're right. It's just, our baseball playoffs that much harder because of, like, football, it's one game, you move on or you don't, and it's done, like NCAA basketball, it's win or go home. Like, this guitar where there's just ups and downs to it, and it's like a week long of,
well,
the feeling, and I don't know if that's good or bad.
And managers, like, you play for today. So you're always throwing your best, or you should be. Like, in a three-game series, you might not catch somebody's best pitcher, right? But in a playoff series like this, you might catch them twice.
Right.
Like, Freddie went game one, and then he went again last night. And short of one pitch,
he pitched well.
Besides
the home run, yeah.
And he just left it up, and the guy just tattooed it. So, I think that's the difference in the playoffs, is you're always looking like, okay, we got to throw our next best guy. How are we going to do that? Now they're stuck with the bullpen game again. That's the trouble.
Right. They kind of pitch, which, like you say, you got to do it that way. Pitch all your good guys, but they just have a lack of starters, which is hard to win. So you hope there's some sort of Euchre magic out there yet,
yeah,
that he's looking down and can turn something. So what is hard for those who don't know too, is our coach leaving to go there 2 years ago. So Council going there, and there's just so much. It just makes it that much harder,
yeah,
when you're looking at watching this and you see that guy in the dugout. When you're winning, it's great and you feel good. When you're losing, it's like, oof, this is tough. This is not going to be good. And Dodgers won, so the other hard part, whoever wins, basically the next game is probably going to get stomped by the Dodgers. Probably.
Yeah.
They look very good. I mean, they got awesome starting pitching. They can pay their guys whatever they want.
They're kind of back to what the Dodgers were, like, you know.
Right. And they get, you know, one less game, so that's just more rest for all their guys. So, yeah, that's the other hard part with all this stuff, too, and why sports are so weird at times and fun, but yet for enough of our listeners, like, don't care at all about sports, and then they just go, like, why do you guys even care about this? It just makes you, you know, upset when they lose, or for no reason really happy when they win, but it's kind of a, especially baseball is a fun game to watch. So I like that there's no time to it, especially in playoff baseball. I mean, you go to the bottom of the ninth and you're still going to have a chance.
Yeah.
Like, you still have a chance to.
But isn't a lot of sports like bragging rights? You want to.
It is. Brag, oh, yeah.
Like brag to your buddy who's a Bears fan, and we kick the Bears fan Bears butt. Like, oh, hey, it's just some of that. And then if you lose, then they give it back to you.
Right, right.
So I think a lot of it's that.
But hopefully a little more magic and excitement, and at least it's more. At least they made the playoffs. It's always hard when you have expectations going
there,
into.
There was zero.
That's it. Well, going into the season,
yeah, there was zero,
and then going into the playoffs, it's like why all of a sudden you started getting expectations. Like, well, we'll at least win this first series, right? And then now it's maybe not. Could we just do that? And
well, you guys are probably doubly depressed because you don't get Zabin anymore. The Brewers is lost.
Yep.
Matt's talking about, our favorite sports guy to Milwaukee. They basically let him, did some cuts and let him go. So that was a weird, like, that happened too, like, right. So I don't know if this is the curse of Zabe or not, but it happened basically the day they lost their first game of those two. Like, he just, it wasn't on the radio and they're gone. So you're right, Matt. You don't have that sort of person to talk you through, like, what's going on and, like, help you understand sports, which just sounds dumb because sports is pretty easy to understand.
It's pretty basic.
It's more of the...
You either got more runs or you didn't.
Or you... Yeah.
I'm glad you said runs and not points, Matt.
When it comes down to the ninth quarter in the third period with the ball on the line... You want that ball. You need that ball.
I think Matt needs to give him a pep talk.
I would imagine.
They need to hit it right through the uprights.
I would.
I think.
Into the goalie net. That'll do it.
Swish.
Swish. Yes. There you go. It's a good way to finish it. Swish.
Let's go Brewers. Let's finish it.
Yeah.
Let's just. Put it away right away, first two, three innings.
Oh, that'd
Let's
be
score
great.
Six, seven runs and beat.
No, this is a game where you do want to, just like boring, where most people, was just a blowout right away.
Yeah.
On our side, I guess.
Just put it
and
away.
And then not like tied in extra innings or anything like that. It would be. It is fun. Did you watch the Phillies lose?
No, we've.
Because they lost in over. Really stupid fashion.
Yeah, bases loaded in a bad throwing error.
Yeah, the pitcher hit to the pitcher and he just kind of fumbled it. And they lost, and then they're done. And, yeah, so it is – sometimes that is somewhat nice to see because then you can at least sympathize.
I do think the other – talking about, like, why we're going to get disappointed, I think is because it's always such an abrupt
end. Yeah.
Like, especially in the playoffs, it's abrupt end. Like, boom, you're done. Like, you work – you invest all summer long in 162 games, and then in five games, boom.
It's done. It's done. Yeah. You know, Matt, have you seen the Moneyball movie with the
bits and pieces? I don't know if I've seen the whole thing.
Yeah, so it's on the Oakland A's. And what I think is wild about that, I mean, they made a movie about this team. And
it was more about the theory behind
Correct.
Behind the team.
Correct. But the team didn't win
anything.
Any playoff series. They lost basically in five games of the first playoff series, but they won a lot of regular season games, but then they talked to Billy Beane, who's this Moneyball baseball guy, and he said, "Yeah, I don't know that the strategy works very well in the playoffs." So like that's where it's a struggle too. Is I was hoping we were the 2015 Kansas City Royals,
right?
Like the smaller, like we being the Brewers, and the more I think about, like we're probably the Oakland A's, and we're not gonna get a movie made about us.
No.
So
unless they win the World Series, somehow be this Euchre thing, did it for him, blah blah blah.
Maybe it'll be more like The Trouble with the Curve.
Oh yeah,
a movie that I also have not seen the whole.
Oh, is it? But you've seen part.
But I've seen enough of it to get the gist of the movie, and that's the scouting over analytics.
Yes,
that you can't trust the numbers, which I think is most sports the problem. Everybody's like worried about trying to. Use all these analytics to decide who's the best player, and then somebody who everybody ignores becomes a superstar. Or so it takes a little bit of both, and not that you can't use that kind of stuff, but you gotta. Sometimes there's talent that is.
Oh yeah, that matters. I think that's a good point. As we get more into agriculture and having all this data, all kinds of data everywhere, and data overload and all. Sort of things ever, and you're right, Matt, is if you still don't get your hands in the dirt, you're not going to have a successful yield at the end of the year. So
I just hope they don't, just one last thing on the Brewers, I just hope tomorrow night they don't like press or try too hard.
Right, that it could becomes like
a desperate, all of a sudden now the pressure is back on them because they're at home.
That's what's odd about it. The pressure is equally on both teams. You know what I mean? Right. It's whoever wins. So that is a weird feeling of whoever gets up first in that game has a huge advantage because the other team's going to somewhat panic. You know, they're going to feel, like you say. But at this point, the panic ain't going to make you play any better. So you're ready. No. Hopefully they can play loose.
Loosey-goosey. All right. Well, now that you guys have talked yourselves off the ledge,
Thanks, Matt, giving us this platform.
Yes. Right. Thanks.
Next week may be worse, but go ahead.
We'll see. Yeah.
Well, by next week, we'll either be better. You'll
have time.
Or they've lost to the Dodgers already. Yeah, like
right.
That.
Right.
You'll have time to manage your grief or your celebrations. You never know. All right. So, ready to get into our topic?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Todd, what are five ways we can plant cover crops on budget?
So, budget's becoming a big term. I think that's going to be a big theme for our podcast here over the winter, fall time and winter, and talking about just how to do things within that budget without breaking the budget. You know, we're probably going to have series on fertilizer, you know, on seed, on everything. I wanted to start out with cover crops. Matt, you made a point earlier, and I agree with Matt on this, that he and I were talking before the episode, and he said, well, most of this isn't really applicable to today. So we might get into that at this point, you've either made your decision or not. This is more thinking about fitting it into budget and what you're going to do and how you can do that. Some of them do fit in theory too, but
or hopefully things you did already because
potentially
you were thinking about your budget
right
as you moved into the fall season here with your cover crops. So
but number five way to plant cover crops on a budget is cut back on tillage. So one of the things that cover crops can do is cause you to actually increase tillage at times, and that can be okay, especially if it's needed because you have that cover crop to kind of, you know, basically help hold soil there. But this is also a way to cut back or maybe use prescribed tillage as much as possible. I mean, there's upwards of $15 an acre in savings here. Obviously, it just depends on the fuel, and it's going to save time and money. And so a couple ways, just you going to more what I would call like vertical till is a way. And then another way that I think I've seen work well is going to maybe you could use a deep ripper, but like an inline or like a lower disturbance deep ripper. Now, deep rippers use a lot of fuel, so that's not necessarily like less tillage. But if you have a check where you have compaction layers, know that the cover crop's going to help with some of the compaction layers. But it also, whatever you do to open up those channels with tillage, if you get a cover crop on it, it's going to actually help your tillage as well because you're going to
have... Yeah, those roots look good in there and hold open those...
Living roots in those channels.
I think, you know, one thing with vertical till too, because I know a farmer that does it, he does it for himself and as a custom application is, you know, you stick an air box on a VT and now you're making your light tillage and cover crop pass all in one as opposed to making two separate passes. So that's plays into the savings angle of... You know, whether you have an air box or, you know, they're a little more popular, I think, on auction sites lately just because of this application for them. But, you know, if you can find one at an auction or somewhere, it can be an easy way to do double up on what you're doing.
I agree with you, Matt, on that a lot. Is the more you can just reduce passes is maybe a way to say it here, was the idea is going to save money. So just whatever you can do to simplify, do what you need for tillage. And
we know that rye will grow on concrete if you
right.
give it the right conditions. So we know we could just put it out there and it'll grow. But I do think, like you guys said, doing that air box on a little vertical till or some type of light tillage is good to get it, you know, at least a little more seed-to-soil contact. And then maybe there's a roller at the back end of that machine that kind of, you know, firms that soil up again and really pushes that contact. I think right now we just need some rain too.
Right.
Yeah, which we got a surprise shower this morning.
Yeah.
Surprise.
It's like, wake up. Oh, it's raining. Okay. So yeah, maybe we'll get more of that. You never know.
Number four is spinning on seed versus drilling. So this actually goes to what you're talking about a little bit, Matt, was another way is just use a fertilizer buggy or some a spinner of some kind, and then if you don't have that nice box to put on your vertical till, and then just go with a vertical till after some really light tillage after to work it in. And
just left the farm. They're doing that exact thing, and it's about $40 an acre for the co-op to put a little fertilizer in. They're going to spread it.
Yep.
And then they're going to work it in.
So. Is that that's the cost of spreading and the...
Cost of spreading,
fertilizer, and
seed, and fertilizer.
That's really good. Yeah. So most of it's probably the fertilizer.
Right.
So, yeah, picking a like potash, I think, works the best as far as a carrier. Kelsol is another one that some guys will use. Phosphorus at this point is too expensive. And
especially if you're a dairy farmer and you've got all that don't need stuff in your pit.
So, a lot of time, just with having a heavier forage diet, your heavier forage is off the soil, so you're pulling more potassium. So what were they using? Potash. As a carrier?
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, throw that in and just let it rip. And I've had one farm works great. He or his dad kind of switch off one while the rest of the crew is chopping. They're out, you know, spinning. I was just, every year that throws me of like, wait, aren't you in the chopper or pack and pile? Or he's like, no, remember I'm putting cover crop
day.
I'm like, that's good. Yeah, so they're out putting cover crop on right away after corn silage, that is, and basically then by the time they get to manure, they've got a nice crop there to work with. So just a lot less, drills are great if you have it, but that's going to be one of your most costly passes because it's expensive to run them. Usually the width and the speed isn't not even close to what spinning would be versus drilling. But the one part that's a consideration or watch out is broadcast in general, you need higher seeding rates. Now on cover crop, I would say you'd probably just ignore that and just not worry about the difference in the seeding rate. But on a real crop, you know, you want to go 10 to 20% more to account for uneven germination and just different losses you're going to have from that. So
it depends what you're doing with the cover crop. If you're hoping to harvest it in the future, then right. You would be more concerned
correct.
About it.
Then you'd want to drill it over spin it, yes.
Mr. Real Crop over here. Real crop versus cover crop. Cover crops can be a real crop, depending on what your goal is with it.
Yep.
And I would say the other side, too, is if you're going to spin it and not incorporate...
Then you want to really up it.
Then you want to make sure you up it, and you're going to be very moisture dependent. So if we're not getting that rain, then we're not going to have good germination.
Goodest? Sounded like you said goodest.
No, it might have just been me stuttering, finding the word. Didn't mean to say goodest. You're the goodest for pointing that out, though, Bill. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, then you're going to be really moisture dependent. So if we don't get much moisture, and that's the hard part sometimes with spinning too, is ideally you'd wait till right after a rain, but if it's too wet, then you're going to make tracks. So if you got to try to time it if you're not
right, you're going to have to be right after rain, right before. Maybe use some sort of roller, light hair, just something to get more into that seed. Because Matt is right about that. That you it's definitely a consideration.
All right.
Number three is plant an annual. So this one is very generic, but basically plant something that dies over the winter. And we have tried that, like sometimes like annual rye. Back in the day, we thought some of it would die, and then like none of it, depending on the
winter.
Yeah.
Annual rye isn't really annual anymore.
Right. So some of these are tricky. So when I talk this, it's kind of more of your oats and your barleys, I guess, in general.
And here's one, too, where your seeding rate, you'd probably want to err a little bit on the lower side, just because, so you don't get some thick thatch of residue in the spring that it's going to be hard to manage. So here's an example of where the opposite is true of, you know, you maybe don't want to go super high.
Especially if you're early, you know, after wheat or really early silage or something where you've got a lot of extra days out there, you know, that, you know, I know the oats that we planted, you know, some of the guys that harvested wheat and then wanted an annual, they wanted an annual, so they did just do oats after winter wheat. I mean, that's almost headed out already.
I can't believe how far along it shocked me to see, because I'm like, what?
Yep, there was
it looks
barley.
Like oats heads, and like, oh yeah, holy man, and they're, and then too, like from the road, it's like, oh, that's really short, and then you get in it, and it's like, okay, this is decent stuff,
right.
Like, this is going to be some nice forage.
Nope, a lot of that, the early oats, barley, was able to head out. Had the same thing 2 years ago, where we were able to get a lot of growth, so this is where the exception would come in, is if you wanted to take a fall forage, if you need extra feed. Most guys don't at this point, but if it was that type of year where you needed something, you know, we had the perfect growing fall for that this year, where you could have probably taken a nice bit of forage, and then you'd want that little bit higher seeding rate. But if you're just relying on it as a cover crop solely, and it's going to die over winter, then you probably wouldn't want to go super thick just to avoid getting that thick thatch.
What is crazy is how thick I've heard for forage, guys going like 4 bushel of oats.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And they said it worked great. I'm like, well, yeah, that's a lot. But I could see playing with that seeding rate could be a really good thing in this scenario too. Of, like you say, Matt, on an annual, just knowing what your goals are with it and how much.
And
any other.
And bin run versus
right
certified seed. You know, if you're getting new oats, you know, it's a bag of oats you're buying from a dealer versus something you're trucking out of somebody's bin, that changes that too.
Any other annual? Buckwheat's another one that comes to mind that can work well.
Yep, buckwheat, you just got to watch. It grows fast and reseeds itself fast.
Yeah.
So for an extended season, I wouldn't want to go only buckwheat.
No, I had, yes, 1 year we planted like a 12-way mix after wheat, and we had buckwheat weed problems the following year because it just was a tricky one.
So oats and spring barley are probably your best.
Yep, barley is
your best option.
I like barley a lot for that option.
Barley grows really
and,
fast.
And radish would be in that.
Yeah.
You know, your bar,
yeah, your brassicas.
Your B-rad, your barley trips, radish mix.
Radish.
So that too, the seeding rate, we're pulling that way, way back as far as to save cost and still get a little out there, but not overdo it.
Yeah, particularly the radish turnip, like small seed, a lot of seed per pound.
Two?
Half a pound.
Oh, boy.
To a pound.
Ooh, Matt. Oh, I like
good.
That's really.
Ooh, we'll get to that. Okay.
Like okay.
I like reason.
Because usually we're not doing it solely. We're doing it in a mix. So.
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah.
Think about when, I remember the first, I'll never forget, it was at a Outagamie Forage Council at the auction, and they had some tillage radish for sale.
10 pounds?
And it was like, I was going to say 12 was even the rate, Oof. You know, like, you know, this bag will do just about 10 acres.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 20,000 to 40,000 seeds per pound.
Right.
With the tillage radish. So when you think about how many seeds per square foot you're getting out of that, that's, you go even 4 pounds would be a lot of seed out there.
It's like seeding soybeans.
Yeah.
All right, this goes into our number two and number one, so we'll keep moving. Number two is plant cheap seed. So the cheapest mix you can find, bin run, anything, you know, just avoid any sort of expensive seed, and that'll help you a lot. So it's a couple, obviously winter wheat in general is quite cheap. Rye used to be very cheap. That one's maybe gotten a little bit more expensive, but still cheap. And then oats and barley kind of can be in between. I would say right now, especially if you have your own winter wheat that you just harvested, that's a really good cover crop to reuse on your farm. One of the trickiest ones can be triticale, actually, which I would say in general, we're not using triticale as a cover crop. It's more as a forage crop. But the cost of triticale is quite expensive. So that one kind of puts itself out. But, yeah, just checking, you know, going to in our area, there's Pulaski Warehouse that sells a lot of cover crop seed. Or, you know, pick your vendor, talk to them about the cost of the seed. Have that budget in mind, so know what you want to spend, and then kind of fit something around that. I mean, the market that maybe screwing this up a little bit is like deer plot seed, mm-hmm. is that some of those get extremely expensive,
yep.
especially for the amounts you get. You know, to me, it's the same. It's like buying a jug of Roundup at Fleet Farm versus from, you know, a chemical dealer.
You can tell most of these guys aren't in ag that
yes.
buy these deer plot seeds, because they're buying these little pouches for like $50 when you could get a 50-pound bag of all the constituents for probably the same price.
Right, right. And again, they're using for a different reason.
Right.
So it's different than how we need it on a massive scale in agriculture. So that is some things to avoid, is just sort of deer plot seed or mixes. Or one good advice would be, like Matt said, look at the deer plot seed ingredients and then go pick out the seeds out of that are the cheapest. One trick we did do, this was for a forage, but we did buy a deer plot seed mix, a cheap one, Widowmaker it was called, and then basically...
Sounds like a terrible name for yes. a deer plot seed.
So then basically used like a very low rate of it, and it worked quite well doing that. It was an easy way to get four kind of other seeds that we wanted in the mix. So it can kind of work, but you got to watch it. Like, again, this was to graze on this after wheat harvest. So if you're doing it on a massive scale, that's not the way to do it. So, yeah, the other kind of watch outs, I guess, with bin run would be just watch for purity and that we're not getting a bunch of water hemp seeds or other stuff
right.
in with it. Rye.
You find it cleaned is ideal.
Yes. I mean, we've found rye seems to leak into everything, and all of a sudden we got rye in our winter wheat fields or just things like that to just watch out. Another one was when, like I said, years ago when we were doing these really heavy mixes, 8 to 12 way mixes, all of a sudden certain seeds wouldn't germinate, and then they germinate the next year, and then you have weed problems.
Yep.
And
yep.
so just being careful with what you're picking that way. So I have good discussions on this. I tend to be less diverse of a mix, the better. Like, I'm good with like three things in a mix. And I think in general you are too, but I just, then we can get the cost down. We can get what we want out there. Where I struggle is when I get six or more plants out there, they don't always do
and
what
it seems,
I want.
And at that point, it's like, do you have enough of anything to do anything?
Right.
You know, you got a 20-way mix. Well,
yeah.
You know, I got a couple sunflowers. I got this. I got that. I got. It's like, are we really doing anything more than just getting a few things, but a good, healthy rate of them all?
And diversity is great, but I would agree, like, especially as you get into the later season, you're probably going to have less options just because some of these things are cool season, warm season. The place for really diverse mixes is like after a wheat, where, you know, you might have something take off right away in the warm season and get some cool seasons there that'll carry you through the fall, so that you're kind of balancing it out. So there, it all depends on your goals and what you're using the cover crop for. But like sunflower is actually one of the cheapest
mm-hmm.
cover crop seeds you can find. It's pretty reasonable to throw in there.
Do you think you're getting because that'd be a heavier, bigger seed. So do you think that way you're still getting a lot of, when you say it's a cheap seed, is it based on?
It's cheap because Matt goes to the neighbors and grabs it out of the bird feeder.
Yeah. Is it cheap? Do you follow my question? I really don't know the answer to that at all. Is it cheap based on seeds per pound? Like, it would be the same as like tillage radish with a very small seed, or is it just in general, you don't need that many seeds of sunflower?
You don't need a lot of it. And it's as far as like getting a 50-pound bag of sunflowers is pretty cheap. I haven't looked this year, but I want to say it's like $9 for
yeah,
a 50-pound bag.
That makes
bag
sense,
or something
right?
Like that.
Well,
I
like,
mean, it's not.
Well, in a way, like Bill said, homeowners got to buy this to just hand out to the birds out
right.
there. So, like you say, it's it's grown on a more massive scale than some of the other cover crops.
Yeah. And it's not something I would do as a sole cover. Like, you're not just going to put sunflowers out there. It's something you're going to have in a mix, but it's a cheap thing to throw in a mix in general.
What do you, on a, as far as a cheap seed, what do you guys think about, like, soybeans as a cheap, like...
Like leftover soybeans?
Kind of. It's hard to find that right. And now with the traits, too, you got to be careful. But, you know, back in the day when you had...
But if you got like, some, if you got seed left over,
right?
You know,
right.
I got like, there'd be five bags left over. You know, if the germination is good the next year, why not?
Right. I just there is a fit, but it's a tricky fit. And I like your where you're going with like a sunflower. I think would be a better fit than that.
Yeah, and diverse mixes. You should have an idea of why you're. Diversity for the sake of diversity isn't necessarily the right answer either. There should be a rhyme or a reason to why you're throwing these things in there. Like the reason to add the brassicas, your tillage radish, your turnips, all that kind of stuff is to get some sort of soil amending aspect from those taproots and the radishes, you know, the tillage effect, and then mixing it with, you know, I know a lot of guys like the rye-barley mix in the fall because then the barley dies, but you got rye to stay green if you're looking for something to overwinter. But it's not as thick, so you can manage it better. Like, there's got to be a reason to do it. Not oh, I'm going to throw 20 different things in here, and it's going to be awesome. And, yeah, it might look really pretty. And then, you know, if you want your neighbors to come over and take pictures with your sunflowers, it's another great reason to throw them in there. But unless you're going to put a donation bucket out there and make some money off of it, it might not be
the right thing. Where you're going with that, because I feel like diversity is either a reason that you pound your chest and it makes you feel good like you did something, or it even, for some farmers, it's the reason they don't do it at all because it just gets almost like too complicated. Like that, well, what mix do I really need? What and it's like, no, it's not that complicated. Pick something simple. You'll be fine. Plant it out there. It's, yeah. So you're right, Matt, of certain farmers just like, oh yeah, I got a 8-way mix and then they name all the things. And well, what's this one there for? Why, you know? If you don't have a why for each seed, you probably can take away some of those seeds out of the mix.
Yeah. No, and, you know, not to say that if you want to do it and you can, you know, if it's your budget, that's fine. But if you're looking for ways to cut costs, is try to find the most benefits you're going to get. Like, for example, you know, if you're planting legumes to hope to get some sort of nitrogen credit in your corn the next year, then... And the timing works great. Do it. But if you're going to soybeans, you probably don't need to build up nitrogen with legumes in there, and you could probably work your mix a different way. So,
all right, and last one. We talked about it a little bit, but I think it's one we can hit home. And I think Matt and I will have a good discussion on what's a real crop. So I like that. But the number one way to save on cover crops and not break your budget is to lower seeding rates. So it's just use less seed. We're not selling this as a commodity. This is used to feed your soil, so you don't need complete coverage. You don't need this to look great from the road. You don't need actually even the above ground to look that good. Your goal here is more below ground and what those roots do. So if anything, too, to be honest, I'd rather it look not that great above and you dig and go, okay, holy man, we've actually got a decent root now. I know the rule of thumb in general is the height above ground is equal to the height below, but what I'm saying is we're really trying to feed the soil here. Now, there is caveats, and I agree with that. If your goal is forage or if it is a crop, that's different. I'm talking purely like cover crop. This is just there to hold soil and capture sunlight, and then we're going to terminate it. Then our goal should be is use kind of as less as you possibly can.
Yeah, and I would say timing of your cover crop plays into this too. The earlier you are able to plant it, the more bang for that lower seed rate you're going to get. Like we're doing rye at 30 to 50 pounds, depending on where we are in the season planting. I mean, if you're getting your silage off real early and you know, it's a good year for that. You could probably go like 35 pounds of cereal rye compared to, you know, this time of year, maybe doing 45, 50. And you're going to get as good or even better stand just because you got it in on time and it can tiller and fill in. And like some of these plants will adapt to that lower seeding rate. So
one of the things I got thinking with this is that you guys have a couple different names, but like bio strips or... But in that case, a lot of times you're doing them 30 or 15-inch rows. So that made me think, too, of, like, say you are broadcasting or spinning it out. Like, as long as you have a seed within 15 inches of each other, that's no different than a bio strip, really, in a way.
It's a random...
Right, you're getting a random thrown out there. But this isn't something where we got to take a foot-by-foot square like we do in alfalfa and look and go, oh, man, there's not enough plants here. So I do think this one gets tricky when you have, so when you have NRCS funding or a different funding source, yes, you need to meet their guidelines and their standards. But one of the considerations here would be is if you're planting on your own, take theirs and just cut them in half, and you're probably going to be fine. You know, it's about where you would need to be. You know, they have reasons for having those, and I give them credit in general. They've come down over the years.
Yeah, no, they're working on reevaluating a lot of these standards, but it's a process. It's got to go through a number of steps before they can.
Right, and they it's nice in a way. They have guidelines and minimums, so we know what we got to follow. And I think a lot of those, if we think of what they're how they based them, was on rates for an actual crop, which makes sense. Like, okay, we're going to plant oats is commonly planted at, say, 2 bushel, and we're basing it off that. Well, like I said, I got to find a better word because I don't like not calling it a real crop. I'm calling it a soil builder crop. But a soil builder crop cares way less about your seeding rates than something you got to sell. You know, like in corn this year, if you don't have the 34,000 plants out there in a year count, your yields are going to be way less. This case, if we have half the rate, we'll be okay. We're still building something. We're still doing something, helping that soil out.
Yeah, and just to wrap it back to, you know, we talked with the broadcast side being moisture dependent. You know, last fall versus this fall, we were very dry. We didn't really get hardly any moisture until Halloween last year, from like August to end of October. And so establishing a cover crop, you might have planted seed, but it sat in the ground for a month or more. So now, you know, knowing that and with your seeding rates, you want to make sure that as you're planting it, it's something that's going to grow and have an opportunity. So sometimes just keeping an eye on that type of stuff too, like, yeah, I'm planting it early, but is it going to germinate right away? Are we going to have moisture? Might affect how much you can really play with those seeding rates, depending on what kind of stand you want to see. All right, so there you go. There's 5 ideas on how to plant cover crops on a budget. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So Ohio farmer Jed Bauer is beginning his term as president of the National Corn Growers Association. Jed Bauer is a 5th-generation corn and soybean farmer from Washington Courthouse, Ohio.
Best city name ever.
Yeah, we actually drove by it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember seeing a sign for it.
For the whole, yeah.
Yeah.
It is quite something to write on your address.
A lot of address right there. It's like kind of having a really long...
Yeah, what if you had a long
last name too? Yeah,
and then yeah, the road name was huge.
Invest in a nice printer with some labels. He began his term on October 1st as president of the National Corn Growers Association, and said the challenging rural economy will be his top priority in the year ahead. We need new markets to help alleviate the economic crisis that is threatening the survival of countless family farms across the country, Bauer said. That's why we will continue to encourage Congress to act immediately to pass legislation that expands consumer access to higher blends of ethanol year-round and urge the Trump administration to move quickly in developing new foreign markets. Bauer brings extensive advocacy and leadership experience to the role. He served this last year as the vice president of the organization's board, while contributing as a member to several key NCGA committees, including the Finance Committee. Bauer is also a board member for the Ohio Corn Marketing Program and a former president of the Ohio Corn and Wheat Growers Association. He farms with his wife Emily and children Ethan and Emma, and will begin his presidency as corn growers face the largest three-year decline in net cash receipts in history because of declining crop farm profitability associated with lower prices and elevated inputs. So, good luck to him as he begins his presidency. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So October is playoff baseball, in case you don't watch baseball or haven't noticed. So what do the baseball and agriculture have to do with each other? Well, as you're enjoying this October playoff baseball and seeing players smack and chuck the ball around, you've got to think about its ties to agriculture. The modern baseball is itself a testament to the connection between sport and agriculture. The design and materials used for the baseball has not changed much since the early 1900s. Baseballs have a core made from cork, wrapped tightly in yarn made from wool and cotton. And finally, the ball itself is wrapped in a piece of fine Holstein cowhide and hand-stitched together with red cotton thread. One Holstein cowhide can produce roughly 100 baseballs.
I just looked it up. There's about 2,500 baseball games in a season.
Okay.
So how many baseballs per game?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they could run through 100 baseballs a game with
smart job.
With home runs and foul balls and
a cow per game.
The ones that they throw away because they hit. I mean, every time they're hitting the dirt now, catcher's asking for a new
one. Chucking them. I would have guessed the cow, a Holstein cowhide, would actually have made more baseballs than that. Just seem, you know, a cow is huge.
Do they only use the white part of the hide?
Right. That's what I was thinking. Like, why Holstein? I couldn't find that. If there was something with different other cowhide baseballs or anything like that, but
well, I'm sure too. Like, depending on the age of the cow when it's butchered and everything, the thickness of the hide, there's probably
specifications,
different things they have to look at. Like the neck skin maybe isn't as good as the hind end, or I don't know.
So I was Googling, Todd. I was pretty close. This Baseball 360 website says 96 to 120 different baseballs in a game.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. That's like 10 cases of baseballs. They're like $80 a case, $60 to $80 a case. That's a lot of money.
And they'll never reuse them? Or is it something where they can refurbish
them? I don't know. No. You don't. Nope. They don't reuse a baseball. I mean, in Little League, we're using baseballs all the time, but
yeah, they're going through the lawnmower and go through. Yeah,
right, Major League, I'm sure they probably use them for batting practice or, you know, something like that maybe.
Yeah, or to give away for signing balls if they're not damaged or something. But yeah, I would think they'd have to have some use for them. They're not just filling a dumpster with baseballs after every game.
Right.
Especially at $80 a case. I mean, that's pittance in the MLB world when players are getting paid how many millions, but
right. No, for them, it's nothing.
That still seems a lot of waste.
Yeah, so when you're a farmer out there today and you're touching your Holstein cows, just tell them, like, someday.
That's what a baseball
someday
smells
you
like.
You could be a baseball.
Yeah, or if you're sniffing a baseball, you're sniffing a cow.
So, all right. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. We announced our exciting news last week that we are now on Spotify. So amazed at how many people listen on Spotify, which is great. So thank you to all our new Spotify listeners. Please tell a farmer friend if they say, like, how do I get it? Tell them, go get Spotify. Because apparently everybody has it. All the young people are on Spotify.
All the cool kids.
All the cool kids. So
it's Grandpa.
If you're not on Spotify, you can search Tilt Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts, or on your Android phone, you can download Spotify, or another app like Podcast Addict to listen to us. And you can still listen on your computer and smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time to get into some cool beans. That's corny and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. Some Illinois Baileys won the Forage Super Bowl at World Dairy Expo, but there were a total of 232 entries from 16 states, and that represented the competition for the 41st World Forage Analysis Super Bowl. The winners of each of the 13 categories were presented last week at World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. Peterson Farm in Poplar Grove, Illinois, earned the Grand Champion Forage Producer Award, sponsored by Legacy Seeds. The farm's baleage boasted a neutral detergent fiber digestibility, or NDFD, of 59.7%, relative forage quality, or RFQ, of 306, and a milk per ton value of 3,894. The Grand Champion First Time Entrant Award, sponsored by Brevant Seeds, went to Tiltstock Farms in Plum City, Wisconsin. Their alfalfa haylage had a 70.2% NDFD and a 331 RFQ. The milk per ton value was 3,911. Forage samples were evaluated based on lab analysis, 70% of the grade, and visual qualities for 30%. Lab analysis was performed by Dairyland Laboratories, Inc., located in De Pere, Wisconsin. For, like I said, number of different states recognized, but Wisconsin did show up in some of the categories. Not commercial hay, not really our thing here in Wisconsin. Those were mostly Wyoming, Iowa, Missouri, and Illinois. But dairy hay, we also weren't really showing up in that one. But grass hay, got Ted Peterson from Sharon, Wisconsin, took first. In fourth place was Don and Nancy Hasselquist of Osceola. In Grand Champion Alfalfa Haylage, we had Silkaz Dairy of Thorpe, Wisconsin, Hordes Dairyman Farm in Fort Atkinson, so in third place. And fifth place was JC Cow Farms in Whitewater. Mixed Grass Haylage, Wolt Farms in Brilliant, Wisconsin, took first. Bragger Dairy in Independence, Wisconsin, took third. Silkaz Dairy in Thorpe took fourth. And Seven Oaks of Kaukauna took fifth. Grand Champion Baileage, Nuttleman Dairy in Bangor, Wisconsin, took second. Rambling Acres, Inc. in Stetsonville was third. Ann Mallow of Ixonia, Wisconsin, took fourth. Grand Champion Cereal Forage was first place Nuttleman Dairy in Bangor. Second place, Brown Star Farms in Gillett, Wisconsin. Third place was Accelerant Genetics in Lena, Wisconsin. Fourth, Bragger Dairy in Independence, Wisconsin. And fifth was Marlinda K. Holstein's in Johnson Creek, Wisconsin. So ran the table in that category. Grand Champion Standard Corn Silage was John Schwitte in Peshtigo, Wisconsin in first. Wagner Farms of Oconto Falls in fourth. And Accelerant Genetics in Lena, in fifth, and finally BMR Corn Silage. Denmar Acres and Greenleaf took first. Accelerant Genetics and Lena took third. And Zerbal Dairy Farms in De Pere took fifth. So lots of good representation there by the state.
Now, I don't know, Matt. Illinois beat us in the Forage Super Bowl. Now Illinois might beat us in baseball. So
don't get your... yourself down. It's okay.
Dang fibbers.
Yeah. And a baleage? No.
We just don't care. It's like, it's like soccer. Is like, we just don't care.
Baleage, a lot of haylage and corn silage.
Ryan beat us.
Yeah.
It's okay. Bill, you want to give your brother a hug or something?
He's going to get
props
one.
To this.
After this episode, he's going to need one.
All right. Well, that's corny this week is not that Illinois beat us in the Wisconsin.
That's next week.
Next week's that's corny. This week we're talking silo fillers disease. So it's something to be aware of. So recently a tractor operator resumed bagging chopped corn into a partially filled silage bag from the previous day. Shortly after, the operator experienced a burning sensation in their respiratory tract, symptoms serious enough to require medical attention. This incident appears to be another case of silo fillers disease, a form of nitrogen dioxide, or NO2, intoxication. So silo fillers disease is an occupational hazard that typically affects farm workers during the forage harvesting season. Results from inhaling NO2, a highly toxic gas produced during the ensiling process. As forage ferments, nitrates in the biomass break down and release NO2. This gas is especially prevalent in drought-stressed crops or those with high nitrogen content. NO2 formation begins within hours of ensiling and can persist for up to 2 to 6 weeks. Because it's heavier than air, it tends to accumulate in enclosed spaces such as silo towers, under plastic covers, in bunker silos, or between silage bags. In these environments, the gas can remain trapped until disturbed by human activity or ventilation. When inhaled, NO2 reacts with moisture in the respiratory tract to form nitric acid, a corrosive compound that causes severe damage to lung tissue. Symptoms of exposure include coughing, burning sensations, shortness of breath, chills, fever, nausea, vomiting, and in extreme cases, death. Importantly, respiratory symptoms may worsen hours after the initial exposure. So it's good to be aware of that. I think, you know, it gets talked about particularly when it happens. I know in my family, I had an uncle that got some silo gas and had to go get treated. But, you know, it's something that always should be in the back of your mind when you're climbing a silo or going into one of those bags to make sure that you're taking adequate precautions and let people know where you are so that if you do have issues, then hopefully that you're not stuck there alone suffering from whatever impact it may have. So, serious stuff. Now to wrap things up with our Feel Good Friday, and maybe Todd, you should enter this contest. Might make you feel better. Hunting just got personal. If you change your name to Hunter, you might win a big with Busch Light. So they have a contest going on right now that if you're willing to change your name to Hunter, sorry, those of you who are already named Hunter.
I think if you're already named Hunter, you can...
You can apply for the beer part, but not change the name.
Right.
The change your name part of the contest.
Right.
So...
Just change the spelling of your name. Different way to spell Hunter.
Different way to spell. Well, I think it's specifically H-U-N-T-E-R. I think that's what they're looking for. So Busch Light will actually pay for you to change your name. They'll handle any fees associated with the legal name change. And you will bag enough beer money to stock up on 19 years worth of Busch Light hunting cans for enjoying with your friends. So Hunter, according to the folks at Anheuser-Busch, is an endangered name, so they want to bring it back. They say its popularity has plummeted by 93% over the past 5 years. So Busch Light refuses to let it go, and they want to make sure that one lucky fan who is at least 21 years or older can officially change their name to Hunter. And as part of this, too, they are also having an event in Appleton, Wisconsin, for not only the contestants who are trying to change their name, but people named Hunter can also join, or even if you just love hunting, you can sign up for this big event that they're going to have. They will not tell you where it is until you've RSVP'd, so it's the Busch.com Hunter Gathering. That's what they're calling it, in Appleton. It'll take place on November 16th, and the event will be filled with plenty of ice-cold Busch Light
just in Appleton
around.
We got to just drive around to Appleton.
Yeah.
I think.
Like, how did they pick Appleton?
I don't know.
We don't know. That's why I think this was awesome, because it was like,
I was trying to think of what were we big enough, like if they get a lot of people.
Is that the most hunters they found?
Per capita, Appleton?
Well, I think Wisconsin has a pretty big, hunter population.
What's the over-under on people that are going to actually change their name?
So it started September 29th, and I think I'm trying to find where the one ends.
Ends
27th of October, so you have until October 27th to sign up.
Weeks yet.
Either for the Hunter Gathering or to enter the contest to potentially change your name. And if you go to the hunter gathering, they're going to have an appearance by the Bush Light commercial guy. Hmm. So
if you don't win, can you change your name back to what your name was?
Nope, you don't change it until you win.
Ah.
Because they're paying for any fees associated with
changing. So one person until you win.
Right. So don't go out and change your name to Hunter and think you're going to win. It's not how this works.
The prize is actually, it's a $5,500 prepaid card, which may be used to purchase one 30-pack of Busch Light or any other product permissible under the prepaid card's terms and conditions a month for 19 years to cover all hunting seasons and to cover the cost of legally changing the winner's name to Hunter. Alcohol beverages are not part of the prize. So you can buy alcohol with this card, but you don't have to. They're not like...
Initially, when I first saw the article announcing this contest, they made it sound like they were giving you 19 years worth of beer.
Right.
But yeah, there's a dollar value to it. And I figured there had to be something like, their idea of 19 years worth of beer isn't like what the average Wisconsinite's idea of 19 years
it's
worth
like
of beer.
It's like Culver's for a year. It's like one thing per month or whatever,
Yeah, it's one 30-pack a month for 19 years.
That's still pretty good.
Assuming the price doesn't go up. Like, wonder if there's some sort of, do they give you
what's the price 19 of beer
years is a long time.
Yeah. It's $40 a case instead of 20 in 19 years.
But probably not. I'm guessing there's no, you just get your $5,000 and you're happy. But yeah, so if you're interested and don't mind changing your name, this might be the contest for you. Otherwise, just sign up for the Hunter Gathering, which will be located just a little ways away from our Tilth World headquarters in Appleton, Wisconsin. And I don't know, I'm very curious where they're going to have it.
Right.
Because in November, which, chances it's not going to be somewhere you can have it outside because it's could be really, really cold or
sign up,
really warm.
Matt, and tell us.
So, just spread the word.
They can't make you change your name, right? Like, I just wonder how that would work, too.
Oh, yeah.
Say you're gonna, and
sure,
then
the whatever the contest
then
thing.
You don't.
Like, that's it's separate, though. You can RSVP for the hunter gathering and not enter the.
Do you know many hunters that we could?
I was trying to think.
A couple I know are not 21, so that won't work.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm trying to think of any that.
I know a handful, but they're all kids, friends.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know any.
Oh, I do know one at a farm. He's got to be 21. Okay, yeah, I just thought all hunter. Yeah.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about 5 ways to think about planting cover crops on a budget. Our spotlight, we looked at the new National Corn Growers Association president who started his term beginning of October. Ag History Minute talked about the history of the baseball and how it ties to agriculture. Cool Beans this week is the World Forage Super Bowl had lots of winners from Wisconsin, but Illinois Baileys took the top spot. That's Corny was Silo Filler's Disease, beware and be careful when you're out in those ensiled forages. And our Feel Good Friday, the Busch Light Hunting Cans Hunter Name Change Challenge could net you a new name and 19 years worth of beer. So, thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.